Major Han, Royal 31. You were saying that you'd noticed there are a lot of S mines all around you.
Yes. And you know an S mine, when you step on it, it jumps up about waist high and explodes, and it's filled with ball bearings. And they scatter. And I think they've cut a man in half. You obviously know about those, don't you?
Heard of them.
But I tell you, these prongs, I was absolutely frozen. How I'd missed them, I just do not know. So from then on, every step I took, I looked before I put my foot down on the ground to make sure it was safe, until I got to the track where I could get down to my armored car and then pass on the information and warn about the danger on top of them. They'd obviously realised that was a feature which would be used as a good observation post. And I say, how I reached there without seeing them, well, I don't think I was really looking. My main job was to say, I'll get to the speech and I'll have a look. And you don't sort of have a look round. Oh, I certainly didn't.
You're looking for the shortest way to the top, presumably.
And just sheer luck that I didn't stand on one.
What was the ground like looking forward from that feature? What sort of view had you got? How far could you see?
You could see a long way. It was a flat area. You see the coast road. You could see a lot of the sand and desert ahead of you. And with my binoculars and compass and that sort of thing, I could sort of take bearings and sort of see, you know. Mainly it was traffic moving, not concentrations of traffic. And I couldn't see any gun positions or anything which was static. It was all movement. But you could then say, well, there was, you know, at least a couple of hundred vehicles went along that road in sort of 5 or 10 minutes, things like that.
By this stage, were you still getting reasonable maps?
Well, the maps, I think, were improving because you were getting more into a civilized area, you know, and features were on them, and you could identify a town and the coast road, and they were far better. So you could use your map and you could use your compass and get a good idea of where the stuff was.
That'd make reporting a lot easier.
It was, yeah. As opposed to saying there was a load of trucks there, they're in about the area of a square mile of Sawns Hill. No, it's they were getting better.
Did you know how to clear S mines when you had this?
No,
you hadn't been taught about.
I hadn't been taught how to handle S mines. So the only mines that I dealt with were the sort of pressure mines. But S mines, I think, I don't know how they worked. I know there was the three little prongs, and they went down under a round canister. About 6 or 8 inches high, I think. And what can you say? It's rather a bit bigger than a Coca-Cola tin, a bit larger than that, you know, that size sort of thing, with the three prongs on the top. And they all you had to do was stand on it, and that would be it.
Sounds very nasty. Nerve-wracking too.
Yeah, I think I took my hat off to any of the Royal Engineers who had to deal with that sort of thing. They used to have, as the time, and they started inventing all these different types of mines. Some of them which would be like a spear would come up from it if you stood on it, and sort of pierce anybody. They had some rotten ideas, I think, on mines, nasty things. But after that, I told you we had this section of Royal Engineers attached to the squadron, and they used to have their white scout car. And on the 19th of the month, The crew of the White Scout car, I think it went up on mine as it did, which is unusual for
engineers.
And but fortunately, the crew were unhurt, but they abandoned the vehicle for the night, and they came back into our our squadron Liga for the night. And but the following morning, the section commander, a sergeant, two or three of his men went down to recover as much as they could off the White Scout car. And apparently the sergeant opened the door and it blew up.
It had been booby-trapped then.
Booby-trapped in the night. So he was killed instantly, and two of the men were wounded. So that was just outside Medinin. Hmm. So there must have been someone around, you know, to come and fix that for the night, which was very sad, really, because he was quite a good chap and a big loss, really.
Do you think he might have been able to detect the booby trap if he'd looked at it?
I think he might have done, but, you know, I think one assumed it was safe there, you see, that the enemy were out, but they were very active around Medinin, actually. And I think it was there where there was a big battle, tank battle, with the Rifle Brigade, or 60th, or, you know, that, I think about they attacked, and the Rifle Brigade, with our anti-tank crew, I think they knocked out 50 German tanks. And I think the commanding officer got a VC for that. But you'd probably check that in your... But I think it was at Medinin, or in that area. And so there was a lot of activity around that. Around there.
What was the country like around Medinin?
It was a bit hilly in places. Coastal area. But there was these various hillocks, and sandy, a bit off the main road. But it wasn't featureless like the other parts of the desert.
So places for troops to hide in?
Yes. Yes.
Were there any fixed defences there that you know of?
No, I don't think so. I don't know, because that was in the middle of somewhere. I wouldn't have thought, having got in from Benghazi, where the defences were, it had been probably a difficult place to defend anyway. You know, with the high ground to one side of it, and there's a rise over more into the desert. And what were the hills? I said, not the McMarta, were they McMarta Hills?
You did say the McMarta Hills.
Yeah, they were down further into the desert. So that was a sort of defensive range of hills to the south.
Natural barrier.
It is, yeah. On the 2nd of March, we were withdrawn to Benghazi, or in that area, to re-equip. I don't think the whole of the regiment, it was Les A squadron.
So it was
all the regiment, Les A squadron, went back to re-equip. And A squadron were operating in the Medinin area and took part in a battle. The Africa Corps, Tac 7th Armour Division, and the New Zealand Division in that area. And that was at the time in that Rifle Brigade knocked out 50 tanks.
Presumably they would have had 6-pounders by that stage.
Yes, but they did very well, apparently. But I think that's where the Africa Corps made their main attack on them.
Well, trying to turn the flank at Medinin.
Yes, but they, as I say, they were beaten off. But A squadron were operating with them at the time. And while we were at Medinin, all troops except squadron headquarters, we were equipped with a Dana armed car.
So you've got new equipment?
That's right.
What was a Dana armed car like compared to what you'd had?
Well, it was a lower silhouette. It was a far, I think, better armoured car than any we'd had. A, it had the 37mm on it, which was, gave us a little bit of extra clout. It was a smaller machine, and I think the most important thing was the gun on it. I don't think the armour made a lot of difference. Was if an arm piercing shell hit you, no matter what it was, it'd come through anyway. So I'm a great believer in a vehicle with a big gun on it and very, very light armour. Because I think the lighter the armour pierced could go straight through it out the other side. It's when it's thick armour and it comes through and whistles round in the turret where you get the injuries.
So you need armour to keep out
small arms. Mm. Yeah.
And splinters.
I always like a long silhouette and a good gun. Mm. And I think, and of course, that makes it faster. Mm. See, and I prefer that every time. I used to think that was at the Cromwell tank. That was a nice, fast, low, and with a 2 pounder on it, far better than a great big tank gun tank that moved about 10 miles an hour.
Mm. What could you do there with a 37mm? What would that?
Well, at about
700 or 800 yards,
I think would knock out a tank, because that's all they had on the Hunnies, and that used to take on the Mark 3s and 4s. You see, but they had to get within about 700 or 800 yards, whereas the German tank had a range of what, 1200.
Something like that, yes.
So they had to, that dead cover, that range where they had free shooting at our vehicles. Mm. Unless you could lay down smoke and get in, and once you got in closer, then you could
knock them out
on a better chance.
So the German Mark III, that would normally have, what's the gun?
75mm.
The German Mark III would have a 75.
Mm. I think all their tanks had 75, so they might have one or two of them with a 50, but I think they were mainly 75mm. Mm. You know, so you had that disadvantage of 500 yards near enough, which is a long way on an open,
it is.
Open ground. It's all right in close country where you could use the ground, but on the desert, that was just open country. And unless you could fire smoke ahead a view for about 500 yards to give you that cover, you know, you were sitting targets.
But you were a smaller target, weren't you, than the tank, faster moving.
Yeah.
What sort of speed would the Daimler give you?
You get 40, 45 out of, but again, it depended on the ground. Mm. I mean, it's nice to think that you could go 40, 45 mile an hour, but it's not really possible in lots of places when you've got the uneven ground and the bumps and the bumping and that sort of thing.
What about its handling characteristics as a vehicle to drive and ride in?
Vehicle to drive. Mm. It was pre-selected gearbox. They had a rear visor, a little slot, and a steering wheel at the back, so you could look and steer. The drivers still have to operate, but the commanders could take over the steering to get out of any trouble. Although it's a bit difficult, it was opposite way, you know. You had to sort of practice it to do it. You know, you couldn't just sort of say, "Oh, I'll do this," because you'd suddenly find you were going round and round or whatever. Mm. But I think they were a better vehicle. I don't think they had the same amount of room as the Humber.
I was going to ask about the conditions inside for the crew.
It was a little bit cramped, but it wasn't too bad. It wasn't too cramped. Mm. And of course, we had the radio sets and the gunner seats and the commander seats, just the same. But I think everybody liked it. A, because they could hit back a bit more. And of course, when they started having the HE shells as well as the armoured piercing shells, of course, that was good against infantry anything really. Soft vehicles.
Did it have a secondary armament as well as the 37?
Only the Browning machine gun, which was quite mounted with.
Was that a 0.5 or a 303?
That was a 303. Because the other one was, the main arm was 0.5. I think that 303, that's all you needed really. That with the 37mm.
What about the radio? Was that the same as you'd had before?
Yeah, the same. It might have been a different make. I can't recall just offhand. But the radio, we had no problem with that. The radio was all very good. But there was a certain amount of retraining to do. And of course, we could do that with the time when we were back to do it. Of course, a good driver wouldn't take long to retrain on a Daimler, and the gunner would soon get used to a bit of training on the 37mm to know what to do.
Did it, what about its reliability?
Very reliable, I thought.
Better than the Humber?
Well, the Humber was a good old war horse. You know, it's, I think they put in a lot of hard work and they did us quite well, I think. But the Daimler also did a good job.
Well, was there anything? I know on the Humber there were certain things which tended to fail, like the starter motor, for example. Was there anything that was a weak point on the Daimler?
No, I can't think of anything offhand. But of course, then we were operating in slightly better condition.
Not so hot, or not so dusty.
The ground in soft case, we were probably on the tracks a lot of the time in Tunisia, and probably some of the roads and things. I think you didn't have the rough conditions quite so rough as we did in the Western Desert, because then that was really rough. There was different soft sands, rocks, and wadis and things. I think we were on a little bit better conditions. But on the whole, everybody found they were very, very good. But each troop were equipped with them, except RHQ, or Squadron Headquarters, rather. And they kept the Humbers.
So you were still in your old Humber?
I still had my Humber. Though I also had, occasionally, I had a Daimler scout car, which was always available, you know, if I had anything special to do. And a Daimler scout car would do it, I'd use a Daimler scout car, which, you know, was a bit smaller, probably a bit nippier.
Open top?
Yeah. But that didn't matter much, really.
And the Daimler still took a three-man crew.
But everything else, really, I think, was not a lot of change. Everyone could operate just the same and soon got used to it. As I said, it had a lower silhouette. And on the 19th of March, we came out on the 2nd of March, and by the 19th, we were back into action again.
Back up on the line.
That's right. And so it was taken, 17 days to retrain on the, re-equip and retrain. So, you know, it didn't give us a lot of time to waste, but enough time to do hand in the other, get rid of the other vehicles and get the new ones in.
What happened to the old vehicles when you handed them over?
They all used to go back. It was an armoured replacement group. They'd go back to them, and what happened to them, they were probably reconditioned and done up and for other units. You know, like I think we had an Indian division. Certainly I had an Indian armoured car regiment.
fourth Indian division, would that be?
And they might have well got our Humbers. Various other recce units would probably have them. So I don't know what actually happened to them as they went back, but I assume that's what they were reconditioned and were passed on to some other unit. They might have gone right back to Persia or somewhere like that, where they had use for that sort of vehicle. You know, when they used to be one of the 10th Army Division came down from there, didn't they? Pike or something. So they could well have gone back to anywhere like that. I don't think they'd have been issued to people like the 11th Hussars or ourselves or anything again. And the other way, the thing they might have used them for, as OPs for gunners. Or say you used to have a truck at one time, or a jeep or something, so they gradually got, so they wanted some protection.
They put some of them in Cromwell's eventually, didn't
That's
they?
Right, yeah.
In the armoured divisions, the RHA.
Well, they needed it because they needed to move up.
Well, they were right up with the Ford tanks, weren't they?
Yeah. So, I don't think they were wasted anyway.
But if nothing else, they might have been useful for training purposes.
Yes. Or sold to the Egyptian army. Because they started to build up an army, didn't they? But anyway, by the 19th, we were back in the battle zone. And by then, the enemy had dug in on the Marath line.
Did you go forward to recce the Marath line?
Yeah, we went up that way. And the Wadi Zigzo was a natural barrier there, making it almost impossible as a frontal attack. You know, the Wadi was very deep, very steep, and of course the forces coming up would meet that. And that would be the start of the Marath defences.
Natural anti-tank ditch.
It was, yes. And because Monty then sort of, I think, realised that a frontal attack on that was almost impossible. So what he did, he planned for the New Zealand Division and the 1st Armoured Division to do a left hook.
That would mean going south, wouldn't it? Round the Wadi.
Those hills.
Yes.
And come up to round the McMaster Hills, and that would come up to El Hammer, I think it was. But that would take in, bring right round the back of the Marath defences.
Now that would be an expected move, though, wouldn't it? I mean, the enemy would no doubt anticipate.
Well, he would assume probably, but that was a hell of a long way round. You know, you'd have to go due south and then come right the way round, which was quite a sweep and quite a journey. But I should say that Monty would, Rommel would say, well, I've got to make sure of that. So, on the 23rd of March, around about 7:30 at night, the regiment started to move south in the dark, due south past the Thum Tatawin, was one of the sort of places marked on the map, right past there, and then we came round where the McMaster Hills would be on our right. And that was very rough and difficult going in the dark. And we kept going until 5:30 in the morning and had a halt. And by then, we were sort of at the southern end of the McMaster Hills. Now we had to turn right.
To go past the end of them.
Go past the range of them. Mm. As they were going that way, we kept them on our right. Mm. And we were then going, then we started going northwest. Mm.
What was on your left when you were going around the Matmata Hills?
Nothing.
It was just sand. Open desert. Mm. Who were you leading on that bushwalk?
Well, we were probably leading the 1st Armoured Division by then. The New Zealanders was already gone. Because by the time we got to our start point, south of El Hammer, New Zealanders were already there. So, as I say, as we were going, scrub desert, as we were going along then, and but there was masses of equipment sort of moving in. So it would be the 1st Armoured Div and ourselves sort of leading the way in the 1st Armoured Div. And we got about 35, 40 miles, I suppose, then beyond the Marathon line, ready to come up behind.
Had you had any contact with the enemy during that movement?
No, there wasn't a sign of anything.
What about in the air?
No, I think we had the sky then. You know, I think from after Alamein, I think we ruled the sky, which was a tremendous asset. It meant we could motor with a fair amount of safety. You might get the odd formation might come, let's slip through, but on the whole, I think we were pretty well.
Well, you described the attack when you were clearing the airfield of mines, didn't you? There was an attack then.
Yes, yes. There would be a few fighter bombers or something they could swoop in, come in low, do the damage and away. Mm. But you weren't getting the big formations of Stukas coming in like we had earlier on, where they just saw 18 come and there was nothing to stop them. Mm. So, you know, we were quite happy. As we were going along during the morning of going towards where the New Zealand division were, what do they call it? A flock of locusts?
Swarm, perhaps, yes.
But there was millions, and they came all. I've never seen anything like that. Clicking of the wings, and the ground was covered, or the sky. Swooping quite low, coming right through us. Which was, I don't know where they were making for, but we'd gotten the flight path of them. There were thousands of them. Mm. Although, what they were doing, there was no greenery for them. They were probably making their way towards somewhere nice and fresh. Mm. And
perhaps there had been greenery before they'd arrived.
There might have been. But by mid-afternoon on the 26th of March, all the formations were, having been briefed in their task, were formed up, ready to attack. By then, we were facing, having come along, we were then facing north, which would bring us up behind the Marathon lines, and El Hammer was the centre point just there.
So that was your first objective on your axis? Yes.
And before then, there had been a lot of bombing by the RAF on all their positions around the Mouth Line and the areas where we were going to go through. You see, because the Germans knew, obviously, they'd got wind, I think, where the New Zealand Division and the 1st Armoured Division were. So they would obviously start preparing, but they were really continuously bombed.
Well, as they were preparing the defences rather than after.
Mm. Yeah. Of course, he had to switch his defences down to face the south, whereas before they were facing the coast, you know, coming up the coast road from Edinburgh.
So he was trying to create a flank guard.
That's
and
right.
He was being bombed while he was doing that.
That's right, yes. Mm. So, you know, we had a great advantage. And also, the same area was had a tremendous blasting from the artillery. They were